This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Hiya, it's Olivia Kennedy, but you could call me Liv if you would like. Thank you.
Such, such a cheery start to this episode. Hiya.
You're right.
Hiya. Hiya, everyone. Hiya.
I love it. I just look, like, you have the high levels of energy, and then you have to come over to me, and I have to be like, everything's okay.
Everything's fine.
No need to panic.
No need to panic. Everyone's fine. Well, there is reason to panic, okay? Because we have one of the coolest guests, Liv, here that we've ever had. Like, ever. Genuinely. I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding.
I am honestly
so excited to welcome this guest because I've been a fan for a long time. But then you may have seen our guest today featuring at the Game Awards unveiling their newest game, which is just truly unbelievable. It's being like produced and published by EA, and it just looks incredible. So anyway, I'm going to stop burying the lead, and I'm just going to introduce the CEO of Surgeon Studios, Abubakar Salim. Welcome to the show!
The wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof.
Let's make them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Get into something real big now.
Oh my god, welcome. I am so excited to have you on.
This is crazy. This is great. Honestly, I remember when I was talking with our Dana, who works in marketing at the studio, and you know, we were just like, can we get on this show? Can we do this show?
She was
like,
I was literally just saying to you, it's mad to me that you reached out to us. I was like,
yeah, man.
What? It was the hardest my producer was like, hey, should we have this guy on? And I was like, yes, immediately reply now. Yes, send him all the dates.
Oh man,
we're free when you are free.
I really appreciate it, guys. I really, really do. Honestly, like it's one of those ones where it is just really, really exciting, and it's really, really cool to be a part of it. So thank you very much for having me on.
Of course.
We will we'll get stuck into your work and the new game and talking all about that very shortly. But one thing that we love to do on the show, where we like to start, is learning about people's sort of nerdy origin stories. Just telling us a little bit about, like, where did the journey for you start in, you know, video games and all things generally nerdy. Where did your first, like, your love of this first kind of spark into life?
Oh, right. Okay. Where do I start? God. You know what, though?
It's going
to be a slog. It's funny. I think a lot of it came from my father, actually. So my father, he was a computer engineer, and, you know, he was very much into, like, his C++ and all this sort of stuff, like software engineer, essentially. And, I remember he bought me essentially the Mega Drive. He bought me, he also probably bought it for himself. But
under the guise of buying it.
It gets easier when you have a kid. You could be like,
you need to have this. It's good distraction.
Development, hand-eye coordination.
Well, this really is good. He ended up buying me this, and we ended up playing a lot of games, Golden Axe, you know, Sonic, and God, I mean, just tons. And it was really, I think that was where it began for me, because I didn't really necessarily connect with much TV when I was watching it as a kid, and books didn't really necessarily, I am dyslexic, so it takes me a longer time to kind of, you know, conjure books, even though I've got like tons behind me. It's taken me
all for show,
to make me look good. I mean, the most important one is that Dungeons and Dragons book up there. Like,
that's king.
So, so yeah, anyway, so that's the thing. So like, that's kind of how I got into it. And it just sort of developed over time. And, you know, playing with family, with friends. And I apologize now in advance if you hear any sort of screaming and hollering in the background, because it's Eid today and my whole family is here.
Course.
So
it's
like,
Eid,
yeah,
yes.
So my family are here and they're just, you know, it's crazy.
Luckily we took you away on Eid. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Oh, no, listen, I'm kind of thankful.
I need some time away. Sorry, professional business. And you're like,
honestly, so yeah, but that's essentially how I kind of got into it. You know, it was playing with a lot of family, playing games with a lot of family, diving into these worlds myself. And I think the longer I spent playing them and enjoying them, the more it sort of just, It was just a cool thing to do. And I think it was almost like the best way I can describe it. I think it's that similar feeling to someone who enjoys reading a good book or, watching a good film. For me, it was playing a good game. And that's where that developed and grew.
Yeah, I do. I feel like as well, we were of a sort of almost like a golden generation in the leaps and bounds that games took whilst we were, you know, if we're talking about with like, you know, your Mega Drives and whatever, and then, you know, thinking about the Mega Drive to the PS3, right? Just like that as a jump is just kind of mind-blowing, right? I mean, you obviously were in, you've been in Assassin's Creed game, which I think for me was like the first, I remember when the first trailer for the Assassin's Creed, for the first ever Assassin's Creed came out for the PS3. It was like one of the launch titles, I think. And the trailer was so mind-blowingly gorgeous. I remember just being like, video games are different now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, they've changed.
Like, this has changed. Like,
What always fascinates me as well is like the development of our minds in like regard to viewing the games, like the idea that we like looked at like Lara Croft, like Tomb Raider, and we were like, oh wow, look at the graphics! Like, it's so wild.
Yeah, it's so wild, isn't it? Yeah, it's so crazy. Like, I remember even, you know, Spyro being like, this is amazing, and like, this is so cool. And now you look at like The Last of Us, and you're seeing like beads of sweat and sort of like twitches of the eye, and you're like, this is nuts.
Oh, I'm so with you. It was me and my one of my video game origin stories is definitely me and my mum playing the skateboarding mini game in Spyro.
Oh, man. Spyro 2. So good.
Absolutely outrageous. It was so good.
I feel like everyone has like a niche game that they played with their mum specifically. Like me and my mum, well, I mean, I say niche, but like me and my mum played Streets of Rage. And for some reason, she was like fine with that and nothing else. And I'm like, why is it this? Okay.
So yeah, I think my one was Solitaire.
Yeah.
Sure.
Imagine just card games. It kind of speaks a lot about my mum. But
your mum's chill and we love that. My mum plays Solitaire all the time.
Yeah, it's better than... You say that like, you know, it's better than my mum shouting at me because I've missed several gems. Because I was just like, I want to get on with the story. My mum was like, no, we have to like... My mum was into platinuming games before that was a thing. You know, like, if they'd have introduced trophies back then, I'd still be playing Spyro 2 now. Like, it would be, you know, we'd be still there trying to collect everything and catch that egg snatcher.
We would never have met.
Exactly. I'd still be doing it. Exactly. Yeah. I'd still be living with my mum. It'd be terrible. I joke, mum, I love you. Okay. Moving on. I wanted to obviously then talk about you spoke so beautifully at the Game Awards about how creating a game felt like the ability to tell a story, but the idea like being able to take control. And I think that it's something we've spoken a lot about on this show, especially we were just having a little conversation off air about our actual play, the Wagadu Chronicles, and how playing in an African, you know, sort of inspired setting and really kind of getting to visualize the world in that way, but not just that, but also having agency in that world, I think is a game changer in terms of, you know, especially for me as someone who grew up in, you know, a pretty sort of white middle class area and didn't have a big connection with my father. And so have struggled to connect with that part of my heritage, actually being hands on kind of connecting to a game really changed it, changed my sort of feeling and sensation around connecting with different parts of my heritage. And so I just wondered if you could expand a little bit on the sort of desire to really like take control of a game and why a game was the right sort of
medium.
Yeah. Thank you. To tell this very personal story. And obviously feel free to talk a bit about that.
I mean, to me, it's always about being honest and authentic with whatever art you kind of put out there, whatever story you tell. You know, after I'd lost my father, it was, I'd struggled with dealing with it in a way. And, again, it was, you know, there was a moment where I was struggling to even accept it to a degree. Or I had accepted it, but I was like, okay, just move on. I'd struggled to accept actually the feelings that I was going through. You know, I was struggling to accept the fact that I was hurting. I was kind of a bit like, no, I'm the man of the house now, I've got to do this. And so I went through that phase. And then there was a phase where I began accepting it. And I began being like, actually, you know what? I do feel sad. I do feel hurt by it. And, you know, part of my processing as well is to be creative about it. In the same way that maybe like a singer would write a song about it, or like, you know, or, you know, again, actors would put it, or elements of it within the pieces that they do. I felt like I needed to create something for it. And, you know, nothing really made sense, the idea of doing it as a TV show or even as like writing it down or whatever. It wasn't enough. For me, it had to, again, come from a place of authenticity, of truth. Mm-hmm. And it just really made me realize, like, it's got to be a video game. Because the guy introduced me to video games. He, you know, he brought me into that world. And so, like, I was like, yeah, this absolutely makes sense. And I remember at the time being like, well, I don't know how to start. I don't know what how to make a game. But I was like, but it's got to be a game. So, you know, again, like, and that's the thing. Like, I went on this journey, this sort of this, you know, big learning curve of learning what it means to make a game, driven by this feeling of like, I have to share this story. I have to share this experience. Because I know for a fact as well, like, you know, when I was going through it, it felt incredibly isolating. It felt incredibly lonely. And really, truly, there was a big drive of being like, look, you know, I wanted to share essentially and say, you're not, you know, with other people, like, this isn't a journey that you have to go with on your own. Like, there are people who go on a similar journey. It might be unique to your own, you know, feelings to it, but just know that you're not alone. Because, fun, you know, sadly, you know, we're all going to have to experience grief in some way, shape, or form, be it either through friends, family, pets, or even a job. Like, I feel like it is within our lives as part of the process of our lives, but it does feel isolating. And so, it just, for me, the game medium was really more so a sense of like, yes, it's because of my father and him introducing me to games as one, but also a big part of it plays into the fact that it's an experience that everyone can actually actively has to go through. You know, rather than being something that's passively told you or like told to you through a film or a TV show. No, it's like games, you are stepping into the shoes of the character and going on this journey with them. And that's why it needed to be a game, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's wonderful.
I love the response of like feeling you felt lonely and you were going through that grief, but your way of dealing with that is by kind of like making sure other people felt like they weren't alone. I love that was your tactic with it.
Yeah, it's important too. I think again, like I think it's a bit more sort of kind of accentuated and kind of, you know, a bit of a problem nowadays where I feel like we're very disconnected, and that's mainly because of social media. I'm not gonna be that guy who's like, I hate social media. Like, I get there is a power behind it, but I also think that there is also a removal of empathy there. And I think you know, it's important to sort of remember to just connect. And I feel like with games, it's a very good way of connecting with people, because you're experiencing it, you're journeying in it. It's an active participation in something.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why when you look at something like Helldivers, for example, it's dope because you're playing with friends, man. Yo, love Helldivers,
don't get me started.
Super into it.
Oh, man. Honestly, as soon as we get off this, I got to go eradicate the automaton scourge because they're back, guys.
They're like, back, I know, man. Yeah. So this is
I did just want to say, though, really quickly on that point that you were making then about social media, because I think that for me, what I've realized recently being like was lucky enough to be on Dimension 20 last year, and actually, like, kind of, it was one of the biggest gigs that I've done, and then a big AAA game that I was in came out, and I was like, oh, this is amazing, and I'm starting to, like, get a bit more presence online. This is feels incredible.
Hell
but
yeah.
Actually, thank you. But I think one thing it kind of made me realize, kind of, as I was sort of a bit like, oh, now I'm going to really think about what I put online, or, you know, how do I want to present myself? Because before, up to this point, I've just kind of been like, I'm just me, I'm just vibing. It's, you know, whereas now I'm a bit like, oh, actually, there's a sense of, you know, there's people looking, you know, all of a sudden. Mm. And actually, what I realized was, like, what I think is worse almost than what you'd said about, like, it kind of a lack of empathy. I think it fakes empathy. Like, it makes you think that you're connected with people. It makes you think that you have a shared connection and a sense of empathy for something. But actually, like, it's completely kind of, you know, it's not real. It's not tangible. It's not, like you said, like an experience or a real conversation, or, you know, you're not looking into someone's eyes. You're not, you know,
well, everything
hearing their
you
voice
put out there is curated, isn't it? So
yes,
like,
and I think
inherently,
that's, yeah, I think that's what it is. It's like every post, every whatever is always like, it's like this shaped thing. It's not something real and raw. And like you said, like in the moment experiencing it and, you know, like, you know, running away from the bile titan and losing your mind. It's a very, you know, visceral experience. And actually, you know, everyone needs to experience that. So you should definitely go play Helldivers and help us.
We need recruits.
We really do. Super Earth needs you. Okay. But no, I just think that was a really interesting point, actually, about the sort of why I think video games has particularly connected with our generation and you know, the big sort of drive and steer towards online video games, whether it be, you know, Call of Duty or Animal Crossing. You know, it's all about kind of giving you that sense of we're all in this little kind of area together, going through an experience or something together. Yeah. I think that's really, really amazing.
Look at the phenomenon of, like, Animal Crossing during lockdown,
blew up, man.
It was so.
I had to participate in that, like, in that world, man. Like, and I never play Animal. I don't even think I've actually played Animal Crossing since. But, like, I remember this was like, this is my moment.
Yeah,
this will be my place.
Cultural like movement.
It really was. Wasn't
it?
Yeah, exactly.
It was
an interesting phenomenon completely. But it's just video games can bring people together. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Abubakar, can I ask as well, how was like that process of like stepping into being like, I want to make a game? Like, where did you even start? Like, what was the process?
I don't know.
Excellent.
Like, no, truly, like, I think, you know, the thing is like, I think the seed was planted when I did Assassin's Creed Origins. I was seeing these developers who loved the, you know, working in the game medium, who enjoyed it, who like had a they were passionate about it. And I think there was something really inspiring about that, because, you know, in film and TV, most of the time, people, it's kind of like a job. You know what I mean? Like, you rock up, you do your thing, you go off. Whereas in game dev, it was like these people were really passionate about what they were doing. And I think that was like really cool to be around. And so, you know, I think when the inspiration or the vision of the idea of making this into a game came to fruition, it was like, okay, I'm just going to just ask questions. I'm going to ask everyone and anyone, like, how do I do this? Where do I start? Where do I begin? Like, who do I need? What do I do? And I made a hell of a lot of mistakes during that journey, but I wasn't afraid to make mistakes, put it that way. I was, because that's part of learning, right? So, you know, I started by asking like producer friends, you know, who I worked with at Ubi, and then they moved to, you know, EA. And then, you know, I'd ask then like designers who were starting their own studios or people who had started their own, like I was just picking the brains of everyone and also trying to figure out my own way about it as well. So this is the thing, I had no idea really how to start or where to start, but what I did know is, again, it's this, I had this passion, this vision, and when it came to sort of getting people on board, it was very much just being like, look, I've never made a game before and I'm just a voice actor, you know, so I'm not fake, but I do want to do this, but like, you know, really truly, this is what I want to build and this is where I want to go. How do we start? And again, like, I think the thing is as well, like, I play a hell of a lot of games. Like, I love games and I love analyzing them and breaking them down from the mechanics to, like, essentially even, like, the stories. So you know, I had jotted down an idea of how I wanted this game to play like and how I wanted it to behave. By using that, it was enough to kind of inspire the designers to come up with like, oh, okay, what you actually mean is this within the loop, and this is how you can figure this out. Or going even to an artist and be like, ah, okay, so you want this kind of art style, but that kind of, okay, what about this? And like, it was just a lot of trial and error. And I think like that's essentially, you know, it's very similar to film to a degree in a script, you know, in jotting down and charting down that script. It's like a lot of trial and error and a lot of figuring it out as you go along.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Can I ask if it was it always so for anyone who's not familiar, we're talking about the Tales of Kenzera Zhao, which is the which is a honestly well, first of all, I'm going to jump in and say one of the most beautiful looking games out there right now. The trailer for this thing is stunning. And if you haven't seen it, please go and check that out. But I wanted to ask about this because just whilst we're talking about the process and everything, was it always kind of a platformer you had in mind? You know, what was the sort of original kind of concept for it? And I guess, like, how does it feel now, you know, checking, the, you know, sort of thinking back to those first initial, like, you know, little notebook and a pen to, you know, seeing the, like, EA logo flop, like, you know, pop up and then a trailer for your beautiful looking game. Like, truly, it looks stunning.
It started with essentially the story. It really started with the story and conjuring up that story and the world of it all and what needed to exist within it, taking a lot from, again, the stories that my dad told me and kind of the experience that I went through as well, right? Then it came into finding the genre, because for me it was like, okay, cool. I know what I want to deliver. I know what I want to tell. How do I tell this? And lo and behold, it was through essentially a Metroidvania. And like, you know, I'm a big Metroidvania fan. I love Metroidvanias because they're kind of like semi-open worlds. And like, we're really interesting in that front of being like, oh, okay, cool. You can kind of lose yourself in this world. But at the same time, there is a form of like element of structure. You know, I mean, in my mind, essentially, you know, Metroidvanias are all about, you know, throwing someone into the deep end and having, you know, letting them, you know, have no idea what they need to do. But over time, they get comfortable with the space they're in and kind of learn about it and everything. And that's essentially grief, man. Like, you know, you can never prepare for it, even though it might be coming. When it does hit, when it does come, you're like, oh, okay, now I need to figure this out. And the thing is, it's like grief kind of presents these tools around, or they give you the tools essentially to maneuver and figure it out. But ultimately, you're kind of left in the dark, you know what I mean? And I think like that is something that was really, you know, crucial for me to kind of, to essentially give and to essentially, you know, to share. It was funny, it was like, it had to be a Metroidvania and it had to be this kind of, you know, and I knew that. And as long as you know that, you then set the rules and you build around those rules and you play around those rules.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I feel like Metroidvanias really lend themselves to that idea of grief because it's like, okay, you've kind of got a sense of the controls. You've kind of got a sense of how this works. But like, even though sort of visually this next area might look not 100% dissimilar, you've got a whole new enemy type, or you've got a whole new sort of traversal mechanic, you know, whether it be that you're suddenly, you know, I've been playing some Hollow Knight and stuff, and like you'd get to like a new area, and you know, and you'd be, what a game, right? Like, you know, and you're just sitting there going, well, okay, well, hold on. This one little part of the game, one simple mechanic is now slightly different. It now works slightly differently. I'm now sliding or I'm slipping everywhere, and I need to I take that into account as I try to make this jump at a jump which I've made 1,000 times. And I do think that there is something about the that process of like, hey, you might wake up, the day is exactly the same as every other day. You know what I mean? You wake up, you've got work at the same time, you get up, you brush your teeth at the same time, you go for the run at the same time. But for whatever reason, when you sit down, you stare at that keyboard or you stare at your laptop or whatever it is, something's just not right. Something's not, and you don't know what it is. You can't really put, you know what I mean? But you just kind of got to adapt and you've got to change. And I think that's a really lovely. And I think actually it's really fascinating to get to talk. I've played games, obviously, which kind of explore these kinds of themes, but it's really interesting getting to actually talk to someone who's really consciously putting that forward as a part of the game. And I'm I feel so lucky to live in a world and a time where we're able to talk about games and art and meaning all in the same conversation.
All in the same conversation, but I think that's because it's really evolving. Like I look at film, right? And film has evolved over time. Like, you know, it went from like this kind of silent films to then, you know, very simple storytelling and that kind of thing. Then it went to like the talkies and then it goes into now, you know, now we're in these really epic films, right? And like there's some really kind of crazy art house films. And there's all these different types of films because again, it's an expression. And I think like games are doing that, but at like a stupid speed. they're really evolving into art pieces and art forms, and like I think games have always been an art, and I think that's what's so exciting. You know, I look at the games that I play now and the games that I kind of, you know, want to jump in now, and look, don't get me wrong, I'd love to kind of jump back into Golden Axe or love to play the Sonic of old, right? I'm almost like, as an audience, I need more. And so like that comes through the story, or it comes through the choices of the mechanics, or it comes through, you know, and this is it. It's like, it has to evolve. It has to move forward. It has to change. And I think like that's what I'm really, you know, enjoying being a part of, is that change.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting as well, is that like, obviously our generation kind of like grew up with, you know, playing these games. And like, I think our appreciation for them when we were so young and being so kind of like awe-inspired by them and seeing the potential and the worth of games is really like kind of been come to fruition now that we're in the space to be like, okay, we're, you know, making these mediums, we're making this art, and we really appreciate it. I think it all kind of comes full circle, you know.
Absolutely. And I think the you know, it's like you were saying, I think it funny you should mention Helldivers. I've been banging on about it for weeks and if not months.
Such a good game, man.
But I think it's a perfect,
we were about to do the live show and Jasper was like, you know about Helldivers? Like, are you just talking about, like, you're like, Jasper, we have to do the live show.
But I generally think though it's worth bringing up because of that thing about evolution that you were saying, because I generally am a solo gamer. Like I like, you know, big meaty campaigns. I'm a, you know, PlayStation boy all the way. I love the like Last of Us, God of War, Horizon, you know, all of those are my jam. Like really big, epic, beautiful games. That's my stuff. you know, or like, you know, like Metroidvanias or whatever it may be. But I've never really got into like Call of Duty or whatever, unless I'm like with someone, like I'm sat next to someone on the sofa, then it's like, great. You know, this is amazing. I love playing multiplayer games. Mm. I genuinely think Helldivers is the first time that I've really actively wanted to play a multiplayer game because of the sensation that it gives me, because we're working together and we're, you know, there's a sense of like community, and I'm not like, if someone's, you know, running some meta, you know, outfit and whatever, and they're killing everyone, I'm like, look at this guy, he's sick. It's great. It's not like, oh, I just got like sniped from across the map and I can't do anything.
I can't do anything.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because I didn't play this game from week one. It sucks. And I think it's a really interesting evolution. And I'm like, please make more games like this where I can play with people and not against people, because I'm kind of bored of fighting other people.
And
like,
they, you I know, yeah, I know right exactly now, what you mean, man. And you know what's funny? I the feeling I get from it is like, I remember the feeling of playing Halo 3 for the first time with my mates, and we were all doing it for the first time when it launched. You know what I mean? There was such a great feeling. Like, everyone's at the same skill level. It's like that kind of thing. You're learning about it. You're going into it. It was beautiful. It was great. And it's like, there hasn't been a game that has recreated that feeling for a really long time.
Really long time.
Apart from Helldivers, right?
Mine was Gears of
War. Oh, really?
I used to work at a game store. It was like my first ever job was at a game store. And I'd only ever had PlayStation. And then my manager at the time was like, but you've played Gears of War, right? And I was like, no. And so we sat down, and like, whenever it was like dead on a Sunday, we'd just sit and smash through some Gears of War. And like, it's a very similar feeling of just being like, oh God, when they get up close, you get the chainsaw out and you're like,
oh, such a good feeling.
And that's exactly what you get with Helldivers. And I think there's something about this sort of like, even online, even when we're not even talking, there is a sense of like, arm around the shoulder, no one left behind,
camaraderie. You know,
and it feels so cinematic, so good, and it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so good.
I love it. So I'd love to sort of just pivot back to you know, your amazing work and what you're currently doing. One of the things we always talk about a lot on the show is about, you know, how our experiences have informed the, you know, stuff we do and the things that we create. And one of the big inspirations for Three Black Halflings was wanting there to be a safe space where we could talk about our feelings of being, you know, black, whether it be in gaming, just trying to play games, or whether it was about being in the industry and working in the industry. And I'm very fascinated because I don't know how many black CEOs there are out there, but I think it's pretty pretty baller to be
a handful at least.
The idea is just a handful is sad, but also I think
Jasper, you're one as well. There you go.
I technically am. Yes, we did recently change my title to CEO of Three Black Halflings. So I guess technically CEO to CEO, dude, is what I'm saying. Wow.
I'm equivalent. Where my marketing director's at.
To be honest, though, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Absolutely. Don't have a clue. But I guess the thing that I'm sort of trying to get at here is like, what has your experience been, you know, as a person of color coming into this industry, coming in pretty bullish and being a bit like, you know, I'm going to make this game and, you know, now dropping it at the, you know, the Game Awards and all of that stuff. Like, what has that experience been like for you, both just as an individual and then also kind of lay on top of that as a person of color? Because I can tell you from the outside, incredibly inspiring, my guy. Like, genuinely, the amount of people that I saw online, the amount of my friends that I had a conversation with being like, did you see that guy at the Game Awards? Like, that was the sickest. Like, it was just so amazing to see a person of color speak like that on that stage. It felt like you were representing us all. And I'd love to know how it felt for you and what the reception was like, I guess, after that moment as well.
It's an honor, but also really terrifying. And I think it's really, really cool, because I think on a level of just being able to just like, as just a leader or just as a, you know, just someone who wants to do something and just goes for it, or, you know, there is a responsibility there that you carry for the people that you're leading, essentially, to, you know, not do them wrong. And I think, like, you know, we've been building this game now for 4 years, and, you know, it was leading up to that moment of being able to announce it and show it to the world. Like, I knew I had to do this right. And the only way to do that right is to be honest and authentic and to be real.
Yeah, of course.
You know, really, truly, like, this game is about grief. Like, if you were to remove anything else, like, be it race, gender, anything like that, it is about grief. Mm-hmm. However, there is that extra element, of course, that, you know, being a black man on a stage in an industry that is predominantly, you know, it's predominantly white, and that's, you know, it's not a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. Yeah, I just think it's just the way that it's just the way it kind of we've gone through. And look, you know, there is a, you know, I've been given this opportunity now, you know, by EA, which, you know, are an incredible force. and they gave me this moment. So, but there is this sense of, like, you know, I feel anyway, of like, I want to inspire the next generation before me and say, look, you look like me, or you look different than what you would normally see on stage of these, you know, presenting these awards or these games or whatever. So you can do it too. Like, it's possible. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, I remember when I was growing up, because I grew up very similarly in the sense of, like, I grew up in a very white predominant area. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, for a long time, I used to think that my hair would grow downwards. I used to think, like, my hair would essentially, like, I would have to gel my hair.
Bro, I straightened my hair once.
So did I, man. I would never do it again.
Yeah, no, man. It was tough, man. I used a tub of gel to keep that down.
Oh my God. But this is it. So, like, I remember these moments of thinking, like, oh, no, this is the norm. This is normal. Mm-hmm. And actually realizing that, hang about, there's no such thing as normal. You know, everyone's what they are. But it took me a while to really realize that. You know, I used to, you know, I used to say this as a joke. Like, I didn't realize I was black until I was, like, basically 13, in a way. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a mood. You know what I mean?
And so in my head, it's like, I kind of am, like, in my head thinking, I absolutely want to inspire people to be like, look, you look like me, or you don't, you know, you look different, or maybe you just, you know, you feel different. You can still do this, because it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, truly, like, all you need is that pure sort of sense of, like, drive of, I want to do this. Mm. I need to do this. I have to do this.
Yeah,
and
this
it
is my
will,
place.
And it will happen.
Kind of,
again, I know the world. I wish the world was that simple. I wish it was. But there is a sense of, again, as I said, like, there is this responsibility that I do really feel. And there is that added pressure. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? Let me get to where I'm getting to. And then, when it comes to it, I can't wait to be in a position where I can say yes and no to people. Do you know what I mean?
Because
again, it's just different perspectives. I remember, like, being asked as well, like, why did you choose an African setting? Was it because of Black Panther or the success of Black Panther? Or, you know, like this. No, but
I feel
it's
like
true,
you've been
right?
asked that question wow. way too many times,
but
man.
But the thing is, it's like, and I remember, and I kind of just chuckle, because, like, in my head, it was like, it had to be Bantu setting, because that's just my perspective. you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Like, that's just genuinely, that was the first port of call, because it's related to the stories that my dad would tell me. It's related to where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like, that's just natural, which is totally, you know, in the same way that when you see, like, Greek myth, or you see, like, you know, Norse mythology, or even Celtic myth, or, you know, it's like, yeah, of course, because that's probably what connects and resonates with you guys more. You know, like, don't get me wrong, Vikings was a cool show, and I love Vikings, you know, you know, but the thing is, it's like, bro, I ain't a Viking. You know what I mean? So it's like, so I think, like, there is that sense of, you know, there is ultimately always that responsibility there. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I've just got a different perspective. I've got a different angle. I've got a different idea, you know, and that's fine.
Yeah. Mm. I think
it's so funny how people.
Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, like, mine was a stupid little joke, so I'll just say it's funny how did you know, like, Africa was, like, a location that was created because of Black Panther? Like, they made the location.
Yeah, yeah, it's true, actually.
In Black Panther, and then it's real.
They actually moved it out of the ocean just for that movie. It is a country as well. So just, you know, make sure that everyone knows. That's the one that always bugs me the most, when people are just like, oh yeah, yeah, that's set in Africa. I'm like, where, you know, like,
where in Africa?
Several places.
Honestly, statement you're making there,
honestly,
man.
I love it.
It's a huge part of the world.
Yeah. Truly, like, the, like, second biggest continent. So, but it's fine. Don't worry. Yeah, I guess just
anywhere. I love it. Honestly, I find it hilarious. I would
love as well to pick on the just because I kind of feel like a running theme throughout this conversation and you know, what you've been talking about is this idea of agency, and it's so interesting, you know, like you were saying, like, getting to a point where you're like, you're saying, like, yes or no to people, or you know, having, you know, a sense of control, or finding a sense of leadership, How has that been for you? Because I feel like that's something that is, you know, especially growing up in the areas that we did, I always felt like that was the thing that was taken away from me when I was younger.
Right.
Because mostly because, not necessarily because everyone was being vindictive or actively took it away, but just like the systems and the structures that I was a part of were set up for my white kind of counterparts, yeah. Which is makes sense, right? It was like 95% of our school was white, right? So that it right. made sense yeah. that they were the sort of catered for, mm-hmm. but it kind of meant that the rest of us were, you know, didn't feel like we could step up, didn't feel like we wanted to take part of the talent shows or the, you know, whatever it is. And then I think that's carried through until it's only been like the last few years where I've really felt like, no, I can have the confidence to like lead or to, you know, to really get across my point of view. How has it been coming into being a leader of a 4-year project of a big video game that is being published by EA that is, you know, like you said, like that, again, pressure, but slightly different angle of like, you know, leading this big creative process?
Yeah, I mean, it's been terrifying, to be honest. Like, you know, I don't think anyone really knows how to lead to a degree. You kind of learn on the way and kind of learn as you get on, like, you know, because, you know, I'm an actor, right? So I'm used to being told what to do, where to go, what to say. Like, that's it's a great job. So, what I mean? But what I've also realized as well, like, actually leading a studio and being, you know, head of a studio, it's like, you're still being told what to do, where to go, and, you know, and what to say, because ultimately that's a good leader. You listen, you hear people, and then you decide the direction of where you need to go next.
Yeah.
And I think like that's something that I've been really, you know, sort of wanting to drive forward with the team. It's this sense of, look, I don't have all the answers. Like I'm going to trust and rely on you guys to do so. So that burden of leading in a way has kind of been spread. And I think also the sense of as well, like that for me, it's just been a company is a group of people. And I think like that is, you know, that's like, I'm sure in the dictionary it will say something different, but essentially it is a group of people, right? Yeah. It's companies a crowd in a way. And like, you know, you really, truly, there is a sense of, just being able to kind of accept that and accept that you might be wrong. And, you know, that's totally fine. But ultimately, again, you've got that vision, you've got that idea, you want to go somewhere. Just allow people to help you go that along the way on that. Yeah. And I think like that's, and again, it's very representative of the journey of grief that I felt in a way, because it was only until I actually started allowing other people to help me did I actually start kind of, you know, being healing in a way, because it was only because again, I was very much of the mentality of, no, I can solve this and fix this myself, and which is a very sort of male thing to do, and sometimes also not necessarily also female, but it's a human thing essentially, really, think like you've got this, I can do this, but really, it's, you know, you've got to have just, you know, you've got to be open to just listening and hearing other people. And that's what makes essentially a good leader. It's empathy. It's listening and obviously making the right judgment call. But yeah, I just think like, again, it's funny.
It must have been also like particularly difficult for you, I imagine, because it's a very vulnerable process of like bearing your soul to people, because this game is like your feelings, your story, your grief. Mm. So like that must have been very vulnerable.
But even
well.
But even then, I think like ultimately the vulnerability was also a power, because it's like if I'm going to be open and vulnerable to you, what else can you take from me? Like, what else can you say? And it's funny, I found so much power in a weird way, because I knew that people weren't, you know, now we're in a weird time at the moment where, like, especially on social media, where like people are just weird and, you know, they have differing opinions, and you know, I always get asked, I'm like, you know, are you worried about it? Are you, you know, what do you think if people don't like your game, or if people, you know, start hating on you for like, you know, for silly reasons? I'm like, man, I don't care. Because I'm literally, because in my head, I've done is I've just been honest. I know I've been honest, and I know I've been truthful. So that's your, you know, that's all I can do. That's all I can give. Absolutely. And so, you know, and that's essentially really kind of where what's been driving me and where I've been going with it really all. It's just, as long as you're kind of truthful and honest with yourself, you can do whatever you want. Lead, you know, not even lead, like, you know, just have a loving family, like just anything, you know, just be honest and truthful, man.
Yeah. And I think the, I love the, that sentiment as well. I think I was lucky enough in the drama school course that I did where we were basically encouraged. They were like, you know, my course leader was like, if I'm going to have actors that are still working in 10 years, 20 years time, regardless of whether you're acting or you're doing something else, but you're in the industry, if I'm going to have you in the industry, then I need to teach you how to appreciate what everyone else is doing on set or, you know, or, you know, behind the scenes or whatever. And I think what it taught me was actually like being a conduit is like the kind of leader that at least I wanted to be. And then I think as I've then been around, I've been like, oh, these are the kind of leaders that I think are the most successful. The ones that really are so, so good at listening, truly will listen to what you're saying and also accept that, like, you know, I'm not going to pretend, and I think this is what's so interesting about your journey as well, is like, I'm not going to pretend I know how to do the artistry stuff that you're, you know, what you're doing right now. If you're creating a level, if you're an art, like a level designer for a video game, I'm not going to pretend I know how to do that.
No.
So what I can do is I can listen, I can try my best to understand, and then I can give you the guidance to do your best work.
Yeah.
If you do your best work, then everyone's winning. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's winning. I trust you and I know you and you're good at your job. You know what I mean?
And this is, no, totally. And you know what? It's funny. Like I do, I always say this. I always say like, look, at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, which is happiness. We want to feel happy, you know? Yeah. And I think like that is like, and that is truly on a deep core level. And, you know, we all want happiness. We want, you know, a feeling of fulfillment, you know, an element of feeling like, okay, cool. We're all going towards the same goal.
Yeah.
You know, it's just shades of history, shades of time, shades of, you know, probably you don't even know if they woke up on the, you know, on the wrong side of the bed or whatever. Like, because I, you know, I even think back to the time of, you know, after my father passed away, what was shocking was the world just continued to spin. Yeah. Everyone, you know, and you know, the you know, he died that day, but on the other side of the world, someone's making a coffee. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, whoa. So then,
or someone else is like having the best day of their life because they
or having the best day of their life. Exactly.
What, you know? Yeah.
Oh
my
God! Yeah, it's like it's a day to remember. It's a day to celebrate. And I remember at the time thinking, no, this is my perspective. This is my world. This is this is how I feel. And I think it was as soon as I decided, like, you know, almost, and I'm still working on it, on getting rid of that ego, getting rid of that sense of like, I ain't the main character here, guys. Like, as soon as I decided to be like, yo, you know what? Actually, we're all in this, just figuring out the same thing of what makes us happy. How do we get to happiness? As soon as you start doing that, and you start listening, just being a bit open-minded, it, man, the it just feels like the weight is just lifted off.
Yeah.
And so, it's like, I think you're right in regards to it. Your job really as a leader is essentially to help people find the best version of themselves to a degree.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that they have it in them and they know what they're doing. You're just there to guide.
Bolster.
And help them see it as well. I think a lot of the time, you know, people can get in their own way because, you know, and I'm guilty of this even now. There'll be, you know, times where I'll look back at something that I did yesterday or last week and I go, dude, just believe in it. Like, believe in the idea. Believe in what you're doing.
Just go for
and
it.
I guarantee, you know, then I'll redo it and I'll go, this is so much better. Why was I wasting my time? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I do think it is, you know, that extraction of belief is so important. Honestly, look, I feel like we could happily sit and talk to you all day, especially about your process and to say that we are excited for this game is a complete understatement. I'd love to just really quickly before we let you go, we do have a tradition of asking for a tale from the table. Now, you mentioned the most important book on your shelf was A Dungeons and Dragons book earlier.
Yeah.
You know, this game has support from Critical Role. So I'm assuming there's some relations to tabletop here. You know, reading the tea leaves. Just anything, any memory, any one moment. It can be sad. It can be happy. It can be hilarious, it can be silly, mm-hmm. just anything that you remember from a kind of shared fun tabletop experience. It doesn't have to be in person, you know, whatever. Just an experience that you've had that you really loved and enjoyed.
From a tabletop experience, yeah?
Yeah, a tabletop experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh man.
That was the original title, but so we thought it might be too long.
Yeah. No, I played this what we called it Freelancers, which is essentially like a Mass Effect variant of D&D.
Nice.
And it was great. And I played it with my mates, used to play online and everything and whatnot. And it was fantastic. It was brilliant. And there was this one moment where the DM was essentially going through each of our sort of like character backstories and backgrounds, and mm-hmm. we all had like there was one episode of where we would essentially have your character's like special moment and another character's special moment, and there was one where it was a mate of mine's special moment, and it was him meeting his I would say right now is like his twin, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those moments which it really truly was beautiful, because we had gone on this journey all together feeling like family. And then suddenly, the GM has thrown this actual real like kind of family member there. Mm. And there was this really emotional moment between him and the GM, and we all just started getting really emotional. But the beauty of it all, right, was because obviously this is Freelancers and it was like a Michael Bay film and we had to fight in some way in some cool mm-hmm. dramatic fashion, mm-hmm. was that fight sequence, that battle was probably the best fight of us working as a family, as a team, mm-hmm. within a family. It was just the story, moment was so cool. And I just remember, and again, it wasn't my moment, it was my mate's, mm-hmm. but I remember being a part of it was really, really awesome. And that I would say is like cool. Cause again, there was just synergy there, man. It was just, oh man, this is the thing that I'm going to just go on a rant now about tabletop experiences. Yeah. This is the thing about tabletop experiences and why I love like Dungeons and Dragons or even Blaze mm-hmm. in the Dark. You know, there are these RPGs essentially, where you're playing with friends. It's like the world is your oyster and you can just be completely free. And it's so magical because you can have like no experience or not even know about what you're doing or where you're going or what's going to happen, but something comes out of it and it's like, it's just always magic, man. Yeah. So
absolutely.
I love it. I love role playing games, man. I love role playing. Mm. I love tabletop experiences, dude. Like it is my jam.
Amazing.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Well, hey, look, if you're ever needing a group to roll some dice, you will always have people to roll dice with here.
Come running.
Yes. Oh my God. Absolutely incredible. Well, Abubakar Salim, thank you so much for coming on Through Black Halflings. This has been an absolute pleasure and a joy to hear about your process, to hear about this game. Please, the floor is yours. If there is anything that is maybe upcoming that you want to talk about, if there's any anything specific that you want people to know about in this moment, just the floor is yours. Please tell everyone where they can find you and all of your great stuff.
I mean, you can find me on socials. I'm on all socials as Abzi Babzi on Twitter, but Abzi Salim on Instagram. I know. And on TikTok, but I haven't actually been able to crack TikTok. I haven't even posted anything on there.
Like, it's a different beast. One video and then leaving it.
It's a different beast. But Tales of Kanzera Zao is going to be on all platforms: PlayStation 5, Xbox, PC, and Switch. Steam Deck verified too, which is awesome.
It's coming out
in under 2 weeks. It's under 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
Oh my gosh. It's scary. It's so scary.
It's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
So that's going to be good fun. But it should be good.
I'm going to have to message you on that day and be like, hold on, enjoy it, man. Because like I feel like, it's been one of those days, right? Where you're just like, I don't even know,
just
man.
Like staring at the screen.
I'd be a mess. Is it up? God. Is it up? it's refreshing steam. Just like, God, is it there? Oh God, you know. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Olivia Kennedy, where can people find you on the Tinterwebs?
Oh, you can find me on the social medias of various kinds, at Does Dark Magic. And if it's not that, it'll be at Olivia Does Dark Magic. I want to start getting back into Twitch. So if you want to, you can follow me on twitch.tv/Olivia Does Dark Magic over there.
Well,
so...
a pretty good game coming out on the 23rd of April if you want to stream it on Twitch.
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God,
oh, God. Oh, God, no, absolutely. That's on, like, on top of my list. So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to be streaming this game. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I've been Jasper. You can follow me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias, and I too am on Twitch and do stuff there. I am planning to do a Helldivers stream. I've got a really fun idea for where I'm going to roll to change my accent every single time I die. It should be very stupid but very fun. So come check it out. You can follow the show at 3, that's the number 3, Black Halflings on all social medias. Make sure you check out the description below if you want to find out more 3 Black Halfling stuff and you get more 3 Black Halfling stuff in your life. Like our Patreon, we've got merch. We've got a cool Discord with lovely people in it. Loads of cool stuff's happening.
Look, and the Patreon, look. I'm in charge of the Patreon. It's been a little bit weird right now, but I'm getting on it, okay? You best believe I'm getting on it. We had a live show. It's wild out here.
Yeah, we did. We did. It was a lot. But one last time, a huge thank you to our incredible guest today. We wish you all the best with the game's release.
Thank you.
It's going to be massive.
Tales of Genzera, it will be out on the 23rd of April. Cannot wait. It's going to be incredible. Enjoy it. Have an amazing time. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And Halflings, chat to you next week. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.